You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Before I bring on my most distinguished next guests, a bit of breaking news for all of you. At the top of the hour, Donald Trump has now called for the death penalty in all Washington, D.C. murder cases. He said this Tuesday during the weirdest cabinet meeting I have ever observed in my entire 48 years on this planet. Wow. Okay, back to the death penalty part. Don't let me get digress too far here. Again, this is the latest escalation of his show of force related to the nation's capital that he has described as an effort to combat crime, despite facts reported by his own Department of Justice that undercut that claim. The other thing, which I find really interesting about this, is how exactly is that going to work? In federal murder cases, Donald Trump has already restored the ability of federal Justice Department officials to seek the federal death penalty. But in cases involving Washington's local murder laws, there just isn't the death penalty. And the Supreme Court in 1972, by my read, nullified the death penalty in Washington, D.C. I don't know. And more than 100 years ago, the Supreme Court also said that you can't have the death penalty as a mandatory punishment for certain crimes. So, okay, I guess that's a thing. A judge ruled earlier today that Abrego Garcia cannot be deported until at least early October. He remains in ICE custody. His lawyers have now filed a new claim for asylum. We will continue to watch that case closely. Donald Trump continues to pursue the termination of a Federal Reserve Board governor, the first Black woman ever appointed to that position. Here's what University of Michigan economist Justin Wolfers had to say about this. Undermining the Fed to get lower rates now is like ripping the batteries out of your smoke alarm because it's beeping. It's quiet for a bit, and then your house burns down. Credibility anchors expectations, and expectations anchor inflation. I'll have some more breaking news for all of you at the bottom of the hour, and then we will get to J.B. Pritzker's response to Donald Trump's declaration that, well, he's sending the feds to Chi-Town too. All that coming up and more. But right now, let me bring on my two very distinguished guests, former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen and former chair of the Democratic Party here in the state of Wisconsin, Mike Tate. Gentlemen, it's really nice to have you back. Welcome.
Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks for having us on.
Mr. Attorney General, let's start with you. You both have pledged your support and have joined an organization called the Democracy Defense Project. It is an organization with people from both parties, elected officials, party leaders across Arizona and Georgia and Michigan and Nevada, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and of course, Wisconsin. And what is the purpose of the Democracy Defense Project?
Well, I think comments from members of both parties over the years have really made people call into question the safety and the security of our election processes. And it's really our job, I think, to make sure that people understand how the system works and to believe in how the system works. And so it's really our job to take a bipartisan approach in Wisconsin with regards to the two of us and to encourage people to get out there and vote and encourage them by telling them that their vote is safe and secure and it's going to be counted. Many people don't think that's true. We know it's true. We've seen it from the inside, and we want to make sure that we spread that word.
Mike, let me ask you this. There's two things that are true at the same time, and that is we have to vigorously police the safety and security of our election systems, the voting machines, etc. We need to do that. We need to be clear-eyed that foreign actors who wish to see America fail may have their targets on our voting systems. So we need to both be vigilant and help people feel confident that their vote is going to count. How do you balance those two things when you're talking to folks in all of these critically important swing states that I mentioned?
Well, I think there's no tonic like the truth. And, you know, as you just said, two things can be true, which is here in Wisconsin, and I believe every state, they do a very good job of that policing, you said, to make sure there's no interference from actors that are foreign or domestic, to be frank. But I really think the most important thing is it's really hard to have a functioning democracy if people think, you know, when we go cast our ballots, that, man, what if this isn't working right? And I think, you know, the reason you see people that are, you know, politically polar opposites coming together on this is because things that we care about, whether it's similar issues or polar opposite issues, we can't get that done if people don't have faith in democracy. And there's no reason in Wisconsin for people to not have full and complete trust in how our elections are run, how they're administered, how we count the ballots, how results are announced. And that's why I'm really proud to work with, you know, Attorney General and other Republicans and Democrats on this, making sure everyone understands that.
Yeah, our groups really had the opportunity because we have, you know, people backing us up and other people working with us behind the scenes. We've really had the opportunity to dive in to how elections work in Wisconsin, to deal with and talk with clerks across the state, and to have an opportunity to look at potential legislation that we should support or not support. How accurate our elections are, how secure they are. We've really been able to look into all the intricacies and every aspect of this, and we can sit here with a bipartisan voice and proclaim that we have very safe and secure and well-run elections here in the state of Wisconsin. And when there's all this chirping out there saying that that's not true, we really need to get out there. And I think when we talk in tandem, we have a little more credibility and we need to set the record straight, encourage people to get out there and vote.
Mike, if I can ask you to specific, does the Democracy Defense Project, again, bipartisan group, former elected officials, party leaders, trying to make sure that people understand the facts about how our voting systems work, our voting processes, do you take a position on things like drop boxes, the security of drop boxes? Do you guys, have you been thinking about, is your organization thinking about what kinds of best practices or getting into some of the security particulars to share some of that information without, of course, creating any sort of risk to the systems themselves?
I mean, absolutely. And I can tell you that, you know, I believe that in the municipalities that utilize drop boxes, that it's a very safe, secure method. I think that, you know, we see record numbers of people voting by mail or voting in person and early in Wisconsin and across the country. I think nationwide, 1 in 3 people voted by mail in the last November's presidential election. And I think that's fabulous that people have, you know, a little more flexibility than having to necessarily stand in line on election day. Maybe they have sick parents to take care of, maybe themselves don't have the ability to get to the polling place on election day. And we can have expanded the ability of how people cast ballots at the same time while maintaining the utmost standards of security and integrity in our election process. And I'm here as a, you know, lifelong Democrat and JV a lifelong Republican to say, you know, in America, we'd make decisions at the ballot box, and those decisions you can trust. And I think, you know, I wish we weren't at a place where you needed people to come up and say it, but I'm proud to stand with those that view this as a priority, because it is incredibly important people trust the results of these elections, because they should.
JB, Mr. Attorney General, let me ask you this. A lot of pointed response to the current president's basically attacks on vote counting machines, the voting machines, as well as mail-in voting, which in many states now is automatic. Everybody gets a ballot. You look at Colorado, a few other states have that, and it has been hugely popular with both Republicans and Democrats. What's your organization's response, and how do we help departisan, like, take this out of a partisan lens? Everyone wants our systems to be safe and secure and to trust that their vote will be counted.
Well, I think our group and you having us on the air is one of the steps that we take to do that. But another one is, during my years as Attorney General, we were roughly evenly split in the states between Republican AGs and Democrat AGs. And one of the things that we could almost always agree on, 99% of the time we could agree on, is defending states' rights. And the ability of states to govern themselves, especially when it's explicitly given to them in the Constitution or in other legislation. So I think that in this particular case, you're going to have a Republican president who's trying to do more with the virtue of executive orders or on the federal level. And you're going to have Republican leadership in places like Florida and Arizona, who rely very heavily on mail-in balloting and encourage it, who are going to be firing back a little bit and saying, you know, this isn't who we are. This isn't kind of how we roll. Our government was formed by our founding fathers. People seem to forget we look at the United States as a country, and it is a country, but it really was meant to be a conglomeration of states who worked together on a few issues where they needed to band together and work together. The states really had predominant rights over most areas. The federal government has encroached on them a lot over the years. Voting is one of the areas where they really haven't. It's entrenched
until now. It appears, Mr. Attorney General. No, well, Donald Trump saying he wants access to the voter data. He asked. We know it's on the record. Former Attorney General Bill Barr said, "I was asked to go seize voting machines. I won't do it." This Attorney General seems pretty willing to do that stuff. Yeah, are we in a different phase? Is that part of the purpose of your group?
Yeah. He backed down on the executive order thing a bit when I think he was told that he absolutely couldn't do it. You know, it's pretty clear in our Constitution. It's pretty clear from what legal scholars across the country have been saying, that these executive orders with regards to voting aren't going to hold any water. And the federal government really has no control over state and local elections, and they're never going to. And I think that's something that will be fought back against very hard.
One will hope. I think we all thought that about birthright citizenship, and yet here we are. I want to get into this some more, gentlemen. We're going to have to take care of a few messages. Folks, if you're joining us just now, we've got two of my friends and two of yours, former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Mike Tate. They've been on this program before. They're both part of an organization called the Democracy Defense Project. You can find out more about that at www.democracydefenseproject.org. We'll have that link to the website in our show notes for today. You can find those wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Gents, here's where we're at, right? We have a president that has said some pretty, I think, concerning things. And Mr. Attorney General, I will grant you and agree that I think the law and the Constitution on the things that he said is quite clear. But as a combined impact, I want to talk about if this has a chilling effect aside from the false claims about our election processes and security. Does it have a chilling effect on voters? Is that a problem? And how do these gentlemen in a bipartisan way propose to address it? We got a big midterm cycle coming up. How are we going to feel about it as voters? Don't miss this discussion. It continues on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen and former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Mike Tate, with me this afternoon to close out the half hour. They are both part of the Democracy Defense Project, which is a new organization led by a group of political leaders and electeds across both parties, and which is operating in Arizona, Georgia, basically every single swing state, to help make sure voters remain engaged and that in a bipartisan way, folks are out there trying to make sure that our faith in the system, that who we vote for, that our vote will be counted, that our results are reliable, that is the principle and the highest principle that we all want in our democracy, that we don't traffic in misinformation and untruths. Thank you, gentlemen, for sticking around for another. Let's talk about voting machines and Mike, before we got back on, you and I were quickly finishing up a conversation. We've got a couple of lawsuits that are going on because there was some statistical questions about some vote counts in two counties, I believe, out east. We're looking into that here at Civic. But I wanted to ask you, Mike, again, we've got these dual goals of both having safe and secure elections, making sure the process works, and being clear-eyed about how to maintain election security, how to even audit elections. And I hate almost to use that word because it has such a connotation these days. And you had a few thoughts on this point, again, without getting into the details of those lawsuits.
Sure. And I'll be clear. I don't know enough about the details of the lawsuits. What I can speak to is Wisconsin. And we overwhelmingly use what are called optical scan ballots, where, you know, you fill out your ballot and it gets fed into a machine. I think those are fantastic. They are, you know, as you could say, dummy proof. And by the way, Maggie, the word audit isn't wrong. Not many people know this. Right. The Wisconsin Elections Commission, after every election, actually randomly audits any number of election machines from municipalities around the state. And I actually think when they did it after, I'm pretty sure it was after the last November election, they found a 100% accuracy rate in terms of the machines that they pulled from a random number of municipalities in Wisconsin that people of both parties cast ballots into. And, you know, we've got those 20,000 voters that voted for Donald Trump and Tammy Baldwin on the same ballot. Those people would be interesting to have dinner with. But, yes. You know, the voting machines in Wisconsin actually are audited for safety and accuracy. And again, that, you know, our machines in Wisconsin are safe. Our processes are safe. You know, methods that are allowed are very safe, and people should trust the results of elections here.
Well, and in addition to that, I want to say that they're not only safe and are audited and proven to be safe, they actually increase the accuracy of our ballot counting, because you've got a machine that is designed specifically for that one purpose. Right. Pretty simple task for a computer in this computerized day and age, which takes the human error completely out of the equation. Paper ballots are still used. They're maintained, so there's always the ability to double check on them as well. I think they really actually help our system, and getting rid of them would be a step backwards when it comes to the security of our voting process.
Yeah. Jamie, I couldn't agree with you more. And having been Milwaukee County's lead attorney during the 2020 recount and having sat in the Wisconsin Center District every day for the three-ish weeks that it took to get all of those recounted, and having seen piles hand counted and then machine counted and then hand counted and machine counted again, I know of exactly what you speak. Machine counted ballots, those totals are going to be more accurate, certainly, than a human being. There will be more errors. Nobody wants to relive Bush v. Gore and hanging chads. I mean, that is not a good and reliable way to run those types of elections. Let me turn to you, Mike, and JB, I want to get your thoughts. Gentlemen, we got just a couple of minutes left. The chilling effect, I this is the thing that keeps me up at night. Like, it doesn't take enough. It just takes like the ephemera, right, of mistrust. And we seem to have so much of it. And I don't see this president stepping back from the partisan, the politicization of election systems. I don't mean you're not running hard for your office, but the politicization of the systems themselves. His calls for Colorado to release a woman who clearly violated laws and was convicted by a jury of her peers for election handling, mishandling of election information and machines. Do you have a concern that there will be a chilling effect going into the 2026 midterms and beyond from all of this mistrust that I think has been fomented? And how do we push back on that?
We push back. I mean, let me say, it's something I'm concerned about, and I'm concerned about it because I'm an American before I'm a Democrat. And, you know, I think that's incredibly important. People trust it. And I don't like that there are forces out there. But I would also posit, we may be in an environment where it's extraordinarily loud and extraordinarily prominent, given how the world works today, these are voices that have likely existed going back, you know, through the history of this nation. What I think the way you combat it is you get people like myself and like the former attorney general who have campaigned against each other aggressively over the years, me against him, because he actually had the courage to put his name on the ballot, and I never have. But it's talking about there with bipartisan voices saying, hey, we're going to fight like hell in the marketplace of ideas. Then we're going to let the voters decide, and you can choose, you can trust that choice.
I'll add in real quickly that we've been in the field polling several times, right, and we'll be in again this fall, I believe, polling. And our polling shows that despite the politicization of elections issues, that the faith and confidence of our voters has been increasing across the board.
That's right.
That's former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Mike Tate. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. You can find out more about the Democracy Defense Project at their website, democracydefenseproject.org. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. I discuss more breaking news and J.B. Pritzker's response to Donald Trump's threats on the other side. Stay with me. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Governor Tony Evers has requested presidential disaster declaration from President Trump related to the recent storms across southeastern Wisconsin and the historic flooding. Governor Tony Evers today sent that formal letter to the president and has requested that that be extended to Milwaukee, Washington and Waukesha counties for the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Individual Assistance Program. It also includes FEMA's Public Assistance Program for the following counties: Door, Grant, Milwaukee, Ozaukee, Washington, and Waukesha counties. We'll see where that goes. There was a huge win for Democrats in Iowa. It is a bright spot in today's otherwise pretty freaking depressing news cycle. Democrats captured an Iowa state Senate seat Thursday, ending the Republican supermajority in the chamber and notching another special election win that boosts the party's optimism for the midterms next year. This according to reporting by the Washington Post. Caitlin Dre flipped a vacant seat in the state Senate seat in Iowa's Sioux County area, formerly held by a Republican, defeating Christopher Prosh after she won more than 55% of the ballot in a low turnout race. Democrats, take note. And if you want to know why Republicans want to cheat through a mid-decade gerrymander, that would be why. That right there is why. Also in other breaking news, Donald Trump is now threatening to go after those who fund organizations that help fund and organize protests of the president's policies, such as George Soros. Donald Trump posting on Truth Social, George Soros and his wonderful radical left son should be charged with RICO because of their support of violent protests and much more all throughout the United States of America. We're not going to allow these lunatics to rip apart America anymore, never giving it so much as a chance to, and this is in quotes and in all caps, breathe. Soros and his group of psychopaths have caused great damage to our country. That includes his crazy West Coast friends. Be careful. We're watching you. What? Just by the way, that is the definition of fascism. Oh, you help support people who protest my policies? I will imprison you. Be careful, we're watching you. Yeah, that's the definition of fascism. Unfreaking believable. In other news this afternoon, the feats of cruelty seem to have no limit or end in sight. The Department of Homeland Security is now barring states and volunteer groups that receive government funds from helping undocumented immigrants, according to a Washington Post analysis of updated guidelines and interviews with Federal Emergency Management Agency employees. Let me just, I'm not going to read any more of the news copy about this. Let me tell you what's going on. Donald Trump is telling private organizations that they can't help people Donald Trump doesn't like, regardless of whether or not they're criminals. That's what's happening. You can't help people I don't like because I say so. Again, I ask you, sounds pretty fascist to me. It's what he's doing. I'm not making it up. It's what's happening. Truly, truly shocking. And that will bring me to Donald Trump, Chicago, and J.B. Pritzker. Everybody knows Gavin Newsom's running for president in 2028. I think J.B. should run because this guy has a way with words. He's plain spoken. I believe him. It always appears to be who he really is. And the man does not pull a punch, thank God. We talked about some of Governor Pritzker's response to Donald Trump's threat to try to take over Chicago yesterday on this program. We've got some of this sound from his address that he gave yesterday. Let's take a listen. Let's just run a couple of these cuts, if you would, Jacob.
I want to speak plainly about the moment that we are in and the actual crisis, not the manufactured one, that we are facing in this city and as a state and as a country. If it sounds to you like I am alarmist, that is because I am ringing an alarm, one that I hope every person listening will heed, both here in Illinois and across the country. Over the weekend, we learned from the media that Donald Trump has been planning for quite a while now to deploy armed military personnel to the streets of Chicago. This is exactly the type of overreach that our country's founders warned against. And it's the reason that they established a federal system with a separation of powers built on checks and balances. What President Trump is doing is unprecedented and unwarranted. It is illegal. It is unconstitutional. It is un-American. If this was really about fighting crime and making the streets safe, what possible justification could the White House have for planning such an exceptional action without any conversations or consultations with the governor, the mayor, or the police? Let me answer that question. This is not about fighting crime. This is about Donald Trump searching for any justification to deploy the military in a blue city, in a blue state, to try and intimidate his political rivals. This is about the President of the United States and his complicit lackey, Stephen Miller, searching for ways to lay the groundwork to circumvent our democracy, militarize our cities, and end elections. There is no emergency in Chicago that calls for armed military intervention. There is no insurrection. There is no insurrection. Like every major American city in both blue and red states, we deal with crime in Chicago. Indeed, the violent crime rate is worse in red states and red cities. Here in Chicago, our civilian police force and elected leaders work every day to combat crime and to improve public safety. And it's working. Not one person here today will claim we have solved all crime in Chicago. Nor can that be said of any major American metro area. But calling the military into a U.S. city to invade our streets and neighborhoods and disrupt the lives of everyday people is an extraordinary action, and it should require extraordinary justification. So in case there was any doubt as to the motivation behind Trump's military occupations, take note. 13 of the top 20 cities in homicide rate have Republican governors. None of these cities is Chicago. 8 of the top 10 states with the highest homicide rates are led by Republicans. None of those states is Illinois. Memphis, Tennessee, Hattiesburg, Mississippi have higher crime rates than Chicago. And yet Donald Trump is sending troops here and not there? Ask yourself why. To the members of the press who are assembled here today, and listening across the country. I am asking for your courage to tell it like it is. This is not a time to pretend here that there are two sides to this story. This is not a time to fall back into the reflexive crouch that I so often see, where the authoritarian creep by this administration is ignored in favor of some horse race piece on who will be helped politically by the president's actions. Donald Trump wants to use the military to occupy a U.S. city, punish his dissidents, and score political points. If this were happening in any other country, we would have no trouble calling it what it is, a dangerous power grab. Look at the people assembled before you today, behind me. This is a full cross-section of Chicago's leaders from the business world, the faith community, law enforcement, education, community organizations, and more. We sometimes disagree on how to effectively solve the many challenges that our state and our city face on a daily basis. But today we are standing here united, in public, in front of the cameras, unafraid to tell the president that his proposed actions will make our jobs harder and the lives of our residents worse.
Yeah, it is a barn burner of a speech. At one time, he addresses Donald Trump directly and says, "Mr. President, do not come to Chicago." And he includes this in his closing statement, the closeout of the speech. I'm just going to read it because it's so important. "Finally, to the Trump administration officials who are complicit in this scheme, to the public servants who have forsaken their oath to the Constitution to serve the petty whims of an arrogant little man, to any federal official who would come to Chicago and try to incite my people into violence as a pretext for something darker and more dangerous, we are watching and we are taking names." Damn. "And this: you can delay justice for a time, but history shows you cannot prevent it from finding you eventually. If you hurt my people, nothing will stop me. Not time or political circumstance from making sure that you face justice under our constitutional rule of law. As Dr. King once said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Humbly, I would add, it doesn't bend on its own. History tells us we often have to apply force needed to make sure that the arc gets where it needs to go. This is one of those times." Contrast that with this sycophancy, the Dear Leader cabinet meeting yesterday in the Oval Office. Take a listen.
"This job under the president's leadership.
You are the single finest candidate since the Nobel Peace, this Nobel Award was ever talked about.
Thank you for your leadership, for your boldness, for your clarity, for common sense.
This is just such a great opportunity, really, to recognize your leadership.
It's pretty great to celebrate Labor Day with Builder, who loves labor.
You have saved this country by making it the best place in the world to do business again.
You are really the transformational president of the American worker, along with the American flag and President Roosevelt."
And Donald Trump's response to J.B. Pritzker, cut 7.
"So I would have much more respect for Pritzker if he'd call me up and say, I have a problem, can you help me fix it? I would be so happy to do it. I don't love, not that I don't have the right to do anything I want to do. I'm the president of the United States. If I think our country's in danger, and it is in danger in these cities, I can do it. No problem going in and solving, you know, his
difficulties. Dear Mr. President, but it would no, be nice you do not call. Have the right to do anything you want to do. Read the Constitution when we come back over the hump."
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Come back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, y'all, there is another Brewers game tonight. First pitch at 6:40. Don't worry, we got you covered across the Civic Media Radio Network. I met one of the affiliates in your neck of the woods is carrying the game. We've got WRCE in Richland Center, ISS in Oshkosh, RJN in Racine and Kenosha, CQM in Park Falls, and our newest Brewers affiliate, WBZH in Hayward. All will have the game this afternoon. That broadcast start time is 6:05, so don't go anywhere. Just hang out and enjoy, hopefully, another stunning Brewers victory this evening. Boy, that Isaac Collins. Gotta love that kid. Okay, here is this week's installment of Over the Hump and Trump. Speaking of the Brewers and speaking of fractures in our social fabric, I wanted to share with you, I was at the Brewers game on, was it Sunday? Just a few days ago. I was at the Brewers game on Sunday. And basically a sellout. There were four people, I would guess, somewhere in their mid-50s that were sitting behind me at the game. They were all already wasted by the time the game started. This was the Euchre tribute day, so there was this ceremony before the game started a little bit late. And it was a slower game. So they were not doing well. But one person was especially inebriated. And I could not believe how rude this woman was to the vendor guy, like her husband, and then eventually me and the friend I was with. And it got me thinking about manners and being polite. Because I think sometimes we've lost a little bit of that. And I know it seems every generation there's we used to be nicer to one another that comes up from time to time. But I really feel like we've got to kind of address these basic elements of respect and not the next time, you know, you're in line, maybe don't cut somebody off. If you sometimes on occasion do that. So I usually give us maybe a little call to action in these segments we like to call Over the Hump and Trump. And the one that I'm going to ask us all to commit to for hopefully the foreseeable future is when you notice yourself in a moment where you could, say, respond in kind if someone's being rude to you. Or boy, that guy's not driving well and I could zoom around them. Let's try to make a conscious choice not to do that. And I'm going to try to hold myself accountable for this. I sometimes have a short temper. I know you'll all be shocked to hear that. And so I'm committing to you, the listeners on this program, and of course my senior producer and technical producers listening to me right now, I am going to be leaving earlier for things. And I'm going to make the choice to not zoom around someone if I get frustrated when they're driving. And I'm going to ask us all to try to find one moment where we don't do the thing that could be rude or off-putting to someone. Or when faced with someone being rude to us, we choose not to be rude in return. And I don't mean to suggest anybody should ever do anything or take any kind of crap that makes you unsafe or is mentally abusive. No, I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about some of the daily inconveniences. And this really came to mind for me, not just because I had this experience at the Brewers game on Sunday, and shame on you, whoever that lady was. I think her name was Anne. Shame on you, Anne. Not just because of the experience at the Brewers game, but because it seems to be that the online X feud between Representative Mark Pocan and Representative Derek Van Orten literally knows no bounds. And an article ran about this, and it talks about how both men now have folks sort of in their respective parties and in their circles saying, you guys need to stop this feud. The accusations are really, really personal. I will say that in my subjective opinion, the things that Derek Van Orten has said about Mark Pocan are way cruder than the the clapbacks from Pocan to Van Orton, because Van Orton's vitriol centers on Representative Pocan's sexuality, and it's meant to embarrass and shame him. But, you know, if we can't even have our elected officials interact with one another politely, or at least in a way that's funny. I mean, listen, I think Gavin Newsom's pretty funny. The Trump trolling, pretty funny. I mean, if the Derek Van Orton, you know, jokes about Mark Pocan were funny, maybe it would make it not so repugnant, but they're not. So I think, again, my call to each and every one of us is let's find a couple of opportunities to actually, like, ratchet down instead of ratcheting up, because it seems that that is everybody's MO these days. And it's exhausting. Aren't we all sick of looking for the next reason to, like, pop off at someone? I know I am. Notwithstanding the fact that I do a program every day where I pop off with each and every one of you about the day's news. Thanks for being with me today, everybody, and thanks to all of our fantastic guests, Representative Jody Emerson, Mike Tate, former Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, and thanks to each and every one of you for being with me on this fine program. We got a great lineup tomorrow. Of course, we've got Ask Maggie. It's Terry Barr. Oh, no, that's Friday. I'm getting confused. Today's just Wednesday. Tomorrow, Thursday, we're going to be joined by Heidi Shareholz, the EPI president. We're going to talk about the Donald Trump tariff terror. And Aurelia Glass, a policy analyst from the Inclusive Economy, talking about unions and white workers' rights in an early Labor Day discussion. Thanks for being with me. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.